We greet you in Jesus' precious name. It has been a blessing to be here and worship with you. Appreciated the teaching that we have received thus far. It's Jesus that gets the crown or the prize for a life of suffering, a life of difficulty. And we have his perfect example. You may open your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 4 for a message. There was a time, a long time ago, where a man looked around and then he stood up and he told everyone, he said, "Be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and with courage from him fight your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and for your homes." Fight. Well, the message title is Fight for Your Family. And the text verse is there in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 14. God loves families. We love families. Satan hates families. You know, the family wasn't Satan's idea. He made trouble in the first marriage. He made trouble with the first set of brothers. And Satan is the one who orchestrates family problems, family difficulties, family disappointments, marriage problems. You know, Satan fights against families. That is for sure. So, brethren and sisters and friends this morning, we need to understand that our family is a target of Satan. We'd like to read Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 7 through 23 at this time. We know the story of Nehemiah and his effort to build the temple. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdods heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. And Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall." And our adversaries said, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them, and cause the work to cease." And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, "From all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you." Therefore, said I, in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, "Be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, and your daughters, and your wives, and your houses." And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us that God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows, and the Hamargians and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. They which builded on the wall, and they that bare burdens, with those that laded, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, "The work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us. Our God shall fight for us." So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, "Let every one with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be guard to us, and labor on the day. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that every one of them put them off for washing. Notice Sanballat and Tobiah, they hated to see the work make progress there at Jerusalem. It got them very angry, and they said, "What do these feeble Jews?" They mocked them and said that, even if a fox goes up these walls, it's going to fall down. So they tried to intimidate them. In the Amplified, notice verse 4, it says, "And I looked." In the Amplified, it says that when I saw their fear, Nehemiah looked and he said, "And I saw their fear." That was what he saw. That's what that means. "And I looked." He saw fear. And that's what got Nehemiah to his feet, is when he looked around and saw the fear. And then he began to give words of encouragement. Today, families need encouragement. And that's my message, that we keep building, that we keep repairing, and that we keep dealing with the rubbish. Don't give up on your family, no matter what situation you have. And we'll try to give a few answers to the question, how do I fight for my family? And Lord willing, this year I'll give a few messages that would fall under the points of concern. And this would be the first message of that. How do we fight for our family? Well, I've decided to use the word family as an acrostic. Sometimes acrostics help us to remember something a tad bit better, not always. But how can we fight for our family? I think, first of all, by faith in God. And that's what's inspiring with this little passage here, this story. In verse 14, Nehemiah has those three words, "Remember the Lord." Be not afraid, don't fear, remember the Lord. And then in verse 20 he says, "Our God shall fight for us." How do we fight for our families? Well, we need faith in God. You know, it's good that at least some of us, when we got married, we didn't think of everything. We just didn't think of everything, and that's a good thing, because next we wouldn't have had enough of faith in God. I remember a few weeks ago, Sheila and I, it was just us at home, so we went to a coffee shop, and I was kind of amused with a young couple there. You know, we sat across from each other, but this young couple, you know how they sat? They sat right beside each other. And then they kept looking at each other like that, and they seemed to really be enjoying themselves. She would smile at him nicely. Well, think about this faith in God, and just a couple points on this, and that is faith in God to take the next step. You know, the Jews could have said, "Well, this is too scary. I'm not really into this. You know, I want to be working in my vineyard at home. This is not Nehemiah. I didn't expect this when I signed up to help you with this wall." They could have got an attitude against the wall, this stupid wall, and now we have these burnt stones that we're supposed to pick up. They're damaged, and we're supposed to sort through them and make this wall. And that's the point here for us this morning, is dads and moms and children and grandparents, have faith in God to take the next step wherever you are. You know, Satan wants us to stop. He wants us to freeze with fear. He wants us to be immobilized by anxiety and say, what if? What if this? What if that? We need faith in God to take the next step. Another point on faith is faith in God that he will help us. Notice how Nehemiah said once, you fight for your family. He mentions that in verse 14. You fight for your family, but then later on he says that our God shall fight for us. You know, it's not all on us. We need to do our part, but we need to have faith in God, that God will help us. And this is a very important concept that we need to be willing to keep building and to keep protecting the city. And we're thinking of that as our family. You know, it's not just on us. You know, God will help us. God will help to protect the city. You know, as a family grows, there's more challenges. You know, it's just amazing how family life keeps moving on. You know, first you have your child, he learns to walk, and then there's potty training, and then there's obedience and school. And I had to think back for years, we had those blue victory drill books with timers, and we used to crash that in before school time. I don't know, people probably moved on, dropped that. I'm not sure if they do that anymore. They still do. So yeah, familiar with that. And yes, there's challenges, but there's so many blessings in family life. A month ago or so, I went to Shady Maple and was buying some seafood so we can make a special soup for Sheila's family that we do every few years. And I noticed a young couple, an Amish family in there. I counted their children. I thought, well, these are all young. And they had five young children. They looked like all preschoolers. And later on, went out to the entry, and here they were, mom and dad and these five children all having a little meal together. And you think, wow, what a blessing, but what work? Tremendous amount of work there. And I say that to families, God will help you. God will help you with your family. Have children. You know, the godly line needs to continue welcoming children. And I emphasize that. Godly line needs to keep welcoming children. I remember when our back seat was full on our Pontiac Grand Am. It was Chad and Rosalind and Andrea. And there was Glendon on the way and fourth. You can't get four in the back seat of a Grand Am. You just can't. You can't do it with car seats. And I got some help from Brother Paul Landis. He helped me out. You know what Paul Landis was known for? What he sold? And that was the Chevy Astro. He sold probably hundreds of them. I should ask him how many he sold. But he came to our aid, and there was a time 20 years ago, you drove around, you see a lot of Mennonite Astros. They were a good car. I was sorry to see them go. That was a great little van. But after a while, we needed more space. A big van. Families embrace the big van. You'll be okay. It might be a little humbling to go from a car to an Astro and then a big van. And you know what? I sense a little bit that some dads are maybe just too proud to do that. That they want to have a little family so they don't need a big van. And that attitude needs to be repented of. It's okay to drive a big van. It's worldly and selfish to think that I don't want too many children because our car or our buggy will be too full. I say have faith in God that he will help you raise a family. Moving on to the next letter is alertness. Alertness. Notice that in verse 14, I mentioned that he looked. The Amplified says he looked and he saw an emotion of fear. He saw these people. They were frozen and said, wow, we're in trouble. And that's the emphasis here, is that we as fathers and mothers need to be seeing and hearing. One could hardly be a parent without seeing and hearing. God designed it that when our seeing and hearing are declining, that we're no longer having children. You see, God knew that that's pretty important, that you can see and hear. But notice in verse 20, ye hear. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet? Unfortunately, what can happen in parenting is that the seeing and hearing is working fine, but the getting up and doing is the problem. There are a couple areas that we need to be alert in. We're thinking of how we can fight for our family is alertness in the marriage. In the midst of our busy lives of homemaking and school, making a living, the marriage does need to be tended to. To neglect the marriage is a little like the woodsman that says, I just don't have time to sharpen my saw. I just got so many trees to cut. I just need to cut at it. Well, you can apply that to family life. If you think you're just too busy to take care of your marriage, take care of each other, it's not going to help you get where you want to go. You know, a good marriage will make everything better. It really will. It will make everything better. It doesn't take care of all the woes of raising a child from infancy to adult, but it will help a lot when you have a good marriage and can work together as a team. Secondly, is alertness in child training. It's interesting to watch new parents finding their way with child training. It can be wearisome. It can be, the child training woes can just wreck a nice supper. You know, Jimmy, he throws his spoon on the floor and you pick it up and you tell him no, and he looks you in the eye and he does it right again. Well, your family time, is supper, has just been wrecked. That's just what happened. Because you got a job to do. You got some training to do. And many of us that are now older, we remember those battles. I remember well with our first child, Chad, something that he would love to do is, this is, you young people don't remember this, but young marrieds in the 80s and 90s, they would have a stereo, and they would have glass doors, and you'd have tapes in there. So back then we had a tape, and he'd love to open that door and go in and get the tapes and pull the tapes out. He just loved to do that. And you think we could train him not to? We spanked and we spanked, and finally we had to say, we need to stop spanking. This boy needs some healing. So we just kind of taped the thing shut to make it not work. So he can't do it. But my thought, I share that, there's a lot of young parents here. Don't give up. You might sometimes have to do that, but then pick up the issue again. Read, study, and ask other parents. Beginning Days of Pilgrim, there was a book, Winter Bible School. It says, What the Bible Says About Child Training. It's a very good book by J. Richard Fugate. I think it's still available. But I think every parent, couple, should have a number of good books that they study and read. But that's a very good book. Alertness in Child Training. Moving on is M for motivation. Notice in verse 6 that it says that the people had a mind to work. You know, one cannot build something without a measure of motivation. Back the other month, I took my father-in-law up to Tioga County, and something I observe up there is, you know, so many barns that were just bad shape. Some that I didn't imagine that the lights would be on, but sure enough, it's like, wow, this is a working barn, but it needs a new roof, it needs a new post, it needs new siding. I don't know if it's a motivation problem or a money problem. But, you know, to get something done, it does take motivation in family life. You think of a couple areas that we need motivation is to face the work. In verse 19, it mentions that the work is great and large. You see that phrase there in verse 19, the work is great and large. And, you know, God's kingdom is great and large. And at the heart of God's kingdom is families. It is families. If we stop having families, we will not need schools. We won't need publishers. We will not need first grade curriculums. They could be discontinued. Missions would die a slow death. That's why I believe that the family is at the heart of the kingdom of God. And we need to have a vision for families and talk about families and encourage families. Secondly, think about motivation is to resist the adversaries. We see that in verse 11, and our adversaries. The world is an adversary to the Christian home. We need to make lines of where we go with our families. We need to see that the world is against what we're trying to do. The other month we went to Florida and we had some extra time and a few of us one day, SeaWorld. I think we went to SeaWorld way back in our honeymoon and maybe since then. But you know, I actually paid for a parking there, but wow, I didn't feel good about all the rides. SeaWorld's really changed. Maybe 30 years ago it wasn't, but SeaWorld today, there's many, many rides. It's part of the whole system of entertainment and amusement, I guess. So we left, lost that money for parking. We need to resist the adversaries and see what is not helping us to raise a family. And some of that is where we go. And thirdly, we need to motivation to use our weapons. Of course, the Bible. We need to love the Bible, promote the Bible in our family. And another one is the church, that we love the church, support the church, be here when the doors are open. It's very important. Moving on to I is instruction. You know, this story here weaves in two basic things. It builds in this idea of building and also protecting. And can you imagine that? That you'd have those of you that are builders, that, you know, on one hand you'd have a DeWalt tool, on the other hand you'd have a weapon. Thinking about building and protecting, there's both of those need instructions. How to build properly so that the walls don't fall down. How to protect effectively. In fact, they were to do this at the same time. One hand build, one hand protect. If one fellow just kind of did his own thing, it would kind of hinder everybody. It would kind of affect everybody else. So it was important that you work with the group. This great and large work of fighting for your family requires some instructions. Parents, follow God's instructions, first of all. If we, as parents, are not following the Bible, that's going to be a big problem, a big situation that's not going to help us. And then parents, we need to give instructions to our children. And thirdly, children, you need to receive the instructions from your parents. And there can be some tough patches in family life. And it's a little like, you know, going away for a time and coming home to your garden and saying, whatever is going on, we guess our weeds are just, things have gone to the dogs, gone bad. A lot of work here. Well, that's how it can be in family life. At times you say, wow, we have a lot of work to do. But we can fuss and fume about it, or we can just, like looking at the garden, seeing all the work, just get that in the dirt, start pulling weeds, start working at it. Moving on, L for love. Love is a big gun. It's some big, big ammunition. It's big artillery when it comes to fighting your family. I had to think of that book, Love Does, by Bob Goff. Interesting book. But it's true, love does. If you have love, it will do something. Your love makes common ordinary families into something incredible. Love in a family gives important building blocks for each child, for their future. It's an amazing responsibility. But a couple things love will do. It will communicate. I asked a young lady recently, I didn't know her, still don't know her parents or anything, but tried to understand her life. And she said, well, her dad is very quiet. He don't talk much. And that's something, yeah. We dads need to probably learn to talk if we're very quiet. We need to work at that. But you know, something that will sometimes make us quiet dads, if we're muddled in our own issues. I have learned that will make me a quiet dad if I'm muddled in my own issues. So it's very important, dads, that we are being successful in our own problems, our own temptations, so that we can be a communicator. But I will say that while this young lady said her dad has few words, she needed a car, and hasn't been making much money, and he was going to be kind and give her a car. Well, that is definitely some communication, not with words, but there's many ways that we communicate. So we need to remember that, dads, and some of those communications other than words are very significant. But I would like to emphasize, as parents, I believe in the world that we're living in, it will take more communication, not less. I believe we're probably going to need to talk more than our parents did, more than our grandparents did. I read a good article, I think it was last Sunday, in the testimony on the ministry. And one statement that he had in there, he said, you can't be an ideal farmer and an ideal minister at the same time. And that's very true. And the point is that something will always suffer. And I say this to the businessman here. You cannot be the ideal businessman and an ideal father at the same time. And we have to choose. What gets priority. And sometimes something gets, I was about ready to leave this morning. You know what? I told the boys there's one turkey house I was going to check, and I completely forgot about it. Got distracted with the message. And I said, oh, well, hey, can one of you go check the turkeys? You see, that's what happens. You kind of got to keep flip-flopping around, but we need to have the spiritual as a concern. Of course, we need to be example in those other areas too. We need to talk. Don't wait till things are at a crisis. And, you know, our children will remember. I remember exactly some areas, one particular. when my dad talked to me. The road, the area, it's probably 35 years ago. I told a son the other day, I said, well, you probably remember this talk in this Turkey Eyes feed room. And I want it to be that 10 years from now that you say, this was good for me. So we need to take courage. And because we love, we communicate. And probably it's better than by stops and jerks that we communicate, that all at once we have a lecture and a sermon. But the hard part is not only communicating, but hearing and getting the child to communicate and know what's going on in their world. And that's sometimes when it's inconvenient, it's poor timing. But we as parents need to be committed, no matter what needs to suffer, so we can help our child through their difficulty when they're open to talk. Love also forbears. There's something that love does, and that is it forbears. And sometimes we say, well, this isn't the time to address it. We care about the child. And, you know, there's times when we just can't be picking on all their flat spots. If a child feels that they can't eat right, they can't talk right, they can't work right, that nothing's quite up to our standards, we're going to have a very discouraged child. And there's some tough patches in raising a child where you just have to ignore some things. And it takes wisdom to know what to address and what not to as they mature. But we don't want them to at the spot that they don't feel like trying. And thinking of love, and that is in verse 19, it says that we are separated upon the wall. In family life, we're going to need to accept being separated. Family life changes, and some of us can look back. It wasn't that many years ago that we had 9 chairs around the table. And 10 years ago, I sat in the front bench with three boys. Well, that's where some of you are right now. But it will change for you too. And this happens so quickly. That family life changes and we're separated. We no longer have the children around us. And we love accepts that. And we accept these changes. And some of us, we can look back wistfully to the other's years, or we can maybe look wistfully forward. I remember thinking, wow, if we could... Yeah, there's a season where we just didn't have children for a number of years. And to be accepting where we are in life, in family life, is really important. Because if we're always dissatisfied, we'll go through life and there was never really a good spot because we were always looking back to the way it used to be or always looking forward to what we wish we had. So I guess that's one take home. And challenge to me is to embrace just where we are in family life and say, hey, this is good. Oh, there's less chairs around the table, but this is good. This is a good time. Embrace it and love it. Lastly, for why is years on end. And that phrase is long time, continuous for many years without stopping. There's a book that's called Christ is Full of Love and Power. Now, we sang that song, didn't we? Did you notice that? And did you notice up on the left, it had Christian Burkholder, and it also had Amos B. Hoover on the number 589 in your purple book there. Well, there's a book that's called the Christ is Full of Love and Power. and it's the background, life, and legacy of Christian Burkhorder. And he lived from 1746 to 1809, and I think the book had on 1804. So 4 years before his death, he must have penned some of those words in that book. And it's an interesting story. Christian's mother, Barbara, was a widow, and she had three sons and three daughters. And on April of 1754, they got on a ship and headed to America. A very brave soul, a widow with six children. And Christian, which became a Mennonite minister and bishop, his parents were Ulrich and Barbara. And they were first generation Anabaptists from their respective families. And you think about the huge effect of choices. In 1980, the original martyr's mirror that Christian had was discovered, and that he had got as a young teenager. And I want this to, especially the young people, to tune into this. So Christian Burkhorder was a young teen placed in this world at a, not now, we didn't have a choice when we got placed. He got placed here in 1746. But he actually got this martyr's mirror as a young teenager. And inside, he wrote these words. He wrote that I had purchased it for the benefit of my soul's salvation. I had purchased it for the benefit of my soul's salvation. And the big deal with families is they go year on end. They continue on. And little choices contribute to where a posterity goes. Whether the posterity will go heavenward or hellward. And I want, particularly, this is my closing point, but I would like especially the young people to think about that. You know, Christian Burkhorder was a young man, and he subscribed to the martyr's mirror. And he probably read those stories. And a young teenager, so he may have been 15 or 16, and he read those stories. And I can picture him, you know, maybe shedding tears as he read the martyr's mirror. And my thought is, what if as a young man he would have subscribed to YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook? What if he had dabbled in pornography? Where would the thousands of his posterity be? You think about that. Let's kneel for prayer.